VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 575, recorded on June 9th,
575th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 408th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dunzer.
And I am Jeff Fowler.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, so Scott is supposed to be here. He's out there in the ether. I'm willing to bet you he's having problems with Skype and his cell phone. So when he figures it out, he'll just pop in here.
Maybe.
He'll just appear. So if Scott suddenly starts talking, don't be shocked. It's actually because he couldn't get in earlier. So yeah, we actually took a week off because a lot of events have been going on, and it just became crazy. Let's just say there were little riots a couple of blocks away from me. Literal riots. Funny thing is, I couldn't hear a thing. Because I'm in a building complex, and we're a couple of blocks away from Madison Square Garden, but everything else was so focused in Midtown that I couldn't hear anything. Also, I think a lot of it happened at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. I might have been asleep.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The curfew is over, so I can go outside if I want to. And we're entering phase two, I guess, of COVID-19. Already the southern states who decided to jump the gun are getting hurt badly, but we're not going to discuss that because of that video game related. But wait, you're in Austin, aren't you?
I'm in Texas, and let me tell you something. Like, I know, let's not spend too much time on this, but I keep an eye on this stuff just because I don't work outside too much, but my spouse does. And since April, when they started talking about reopening, there was about 40,000 cases in Texas, and a little under 1,000 people dead. And since April, I took a look just a couple days ago, since they did the 25%, 50%, 100% open thing. Mm-hmm. 20,000 more cases since April, and over 700 more people dead. So that's cool. I love it. It's great.
Yeah. Especially when one of your GOP reps said, I think it was in March, say, well, we can let old people die.
Yeah, not only that, but one of them went on to go ahead and say it's the Chinese virus because they eat gross things. So yeah, I love my reps. They're not stupid.
Well, Georgia just had disaster, so. But yeah, things are just weird.
Scott knows. Yeah. He's here now. He lives in Florida.
Yeah, I've been on.
Yeah. And Florida is where Florida Man is from.
Florida never shut down at all. It's been open the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, so while I've been quarantining myself, I don't know if anybody else has been, but I've just been playing a lot of the same stuff, like Slay the Spire. I forgot to mention, I did play a little of Streets of Rage 4, and this is a while ago, though. I haven't played much of it because I haven't really had time for it, but I found it interesting in that at the beginning it's extremely simple, and I'm thinking, why is this getting so much praise? And then it starts doing layer upon layer upon layer upon layer, in which, you know, and they always had that problem with the 2.5D brawlers, you know, in which there are different planes that you're on. You know, like, you're over here, but this person is more toward the foreground, so you can't really attack. It's sort of like Castle Crashers in that way. So you had to deal with that, too. And then all these special abilities come up, and then these thugs have their own special abilities. And it just gets you know, like a puzzle game, basically a little bit of the ways in. I mean, you've probably been playing it a lot more there, DJ.
Which one?
Streets of Rage 4.
Oh, yeah. I love that game. I've beat it, like, over and over and over and over and over again. I'm actually, me and my buddy have been working our way up to the Mania difficulty, which is harder than the hardest difficulty, and you have to play the game to, you have to, like, beat the game to unlock it the first time. Mm. So, I like it a little bit.
Okay. Other than that, you know, I'm trying to think of anything new that I've played lately. I mean, I can always check my, my recent achievements. Oh yeah, I tried Doom, the new one. Doom Ultimate? I forgot the name.
Doom Eternal.
Doom Eternal. I don't like it. It's, here's the thing. Doom is better than Doom Eternal because, you know, when Doom starts going, asking you with a controller to start hitting enemies in their weak spot for massive damage, that's when I start getting a little salty. I'm not playing it on a PC. I'm playing it with a controller.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have auto lock, which means my attitude is, fuck this shit. I liked Doom when it was just, oh, you see that thing over there? Shoot it.
Yeah, and I, like, Doom Eternal has been very, very divisive for the people that love that game, because there is a, like, there's a lot of verticality in it, and it's almost to a degree that I've heard a lot of people say it's not that fun. Like, just because, like, you play Doom and you want to get into arenas and have big old firefights, you don't want to play Doom and play, like, a Mario game and then do firefights and then play more Mario.
Yeah, I was surprised there was a double jump. And talking about disappointing games, I actually uninstalled Super Mega Baseball 3.
Oh, no.
I had enough.
Ah.
I had enough. It was just irritating. Here's the thing. They have to calibrate that thing a lot better. You know, it's not my job to hunt for where the game has a sweet spot. And there's, you know, either... And my best hitters, my best power hitters, on an ego that I like, say it's 60... They get a lot of base hits, but few home runs. Everything is a base hit up the middle or a pop-up.
Mm.
You know? There's something that game is missing. You know? And I don't know what it is. I also have been playing replaying Sniper Elite 4. Simply because I want to see a bullet go into slow-mo and watch Fritz's memories of his childhood evaporate and splatter against the wall.
I remember you posting a clip or two a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was a good one. Like, you hit a good shot.
Yeah, and the other thing is also, I forgot that there are other spots you can hit, like testicles. So I just did the one testicle shot to get the achievement, and that was it.
X-Ray Cam and Sniper Elite makes X-Ray Cam in Mortal Kombat look like it's E for everyone.
Well, here's the thing. One of them's trying to duplicate reality, and the other one looks like you're taking plasticine puppets and chopping them in half. I also started getting a little bit... I downloaded it. I haven't played it much, but I plan to play a little bit more, but Alan Wake. And the thing is, I originally rented that a long time ago, and I never really finished it, so I decided, you know what? This is a good time to finish Alan Wake.
Yeah, I love that game. It's really good. I'm not a huge fan of the DLC they put out for it, but, like, American Horror or whatever it was that they put out after the fact?
It was American something.
It was like American Horror. Okay, yeah, wasn't a fan. Not crazy about that one, but the base game is great.
You know, there are so many people who are asking Remedy to make Alan Wake 2. It's not even funny.
Yeah, a lot of people were hoping that that's... Like, they've hinted at new projects a couple times, and a lot of folks hope that that's going to be another thing. But it looks like they're kind of focusing in on Control for now.
Yeah, I played a little bit of Minecraft Dungeons. It's fine. I haven't gotten back to it. I probably will get back to it. I mean, it's baby's first Diablo, which is fine. Although I will say, you know, that doesn't mean it's easy, because if they gang up on you, and there's a lot of people with ranged, and a lot of the guys who explode, then you can be in real trouble. And here's the way it works, is that you get a certain number of lives for a mission, and you start at a checkpoint if you die, but if you die too many times, then you have to restart it all the way again from the beginning.
That's lame. I don't like that.
It's fine. I mean, it works in Minecraft Dungeons. It may not work elsewhere, but it does work here. And I've also started playing Batman Arkham Knight again, just to remind myself why I didn't like it. And I think I can say the one word about why I don't like it. Batmobile. I hate the Batmobile. I despise it.
Is there any... Like, what... Oh, you played the game because you don't want to play it, or you played the game to rediscover your hate?
I don't want to play the same game. You know, sometimes you just want to dabble back in again, you know?
I was just going to ask, what is there a redeeming quality in there that you really enjoy that makes you go back to it? Because I just can't even, like...
The Joker, being a part of your psyche. That's a real fun part of it. And now, what's it called? Here's the thing. I hated the fact that it was Jason Todd as the Arkham Knight. It was such a dull thing. Knowing it's Jason Todd, it's a little bit more easier to swallow, because the thing is that Rocksteady kept on saying, the Arkham Knight is mysterious, but it's not Jason Todd. It's not Jason Todd. It's not Jason... Oh, yeah, it's Jason Todd. The minute they started showing the Robin uniform and all that, yeah, it's Jason Todd. You're doing a lot of setup about Jason Todd's death, not to bring him back into the game. The thing I really hate is that the Predator missions and the other trial missions are DLC instead of being part of the game. It makes me want to punch them in the face for that, Warner Brothers, because I'm pretty sure Rocksteady was totally against that. It's just...
Okay, I just had, like, I wanted to take a look at the Arkham Knight, because I couldn't remember exactly what I looked like, and yeah, it's like a palette swap, slightly more techno version of Jason Todd's normal outfit, and it's like, who are you trying to fool?
Here's the other thing, it's an early Xbox One game, and on the Xbox One S X, with a 4K TV, those graphics have been really grainy.
Mm.
They have not upscaled it one iota.
I still like Arkham City a lot. And
I don't like Arkham City at all.
I love that game.
When they started going open world, it just lost it for me. I still prefer the first Arkham Asylum, especially the Scarecrow levels. They have never been able to repeat that.
See, like... Okay. Devil's advocate
and
here.
P.S.,
like,
the Scarecrow in Arkham Knight is a dull bastard.
I think that a lot of the boss battles in Arkham City are well done. And when I say that, I mean, like, the Penguin is well done. The Mr. Freeze boss fight is, like, one of my favorites.
It's okay.
And I like it. I like that game a lot.
I will say this, though. I like some of the characterizations. Like, the one character I love, was it... No, I think it was in Origins, actually. Which one had Copperhead? It was Origins, wasn't it?
It might have been.
Yeah, it was Origins, and I really liked Copperhead in Origins. The fight, there was no real fight, you know, it was a dull fight, but I loved the way that scene played through. She wasn't sexy, she was creepy. But what really the biggest crime of Arkham Knight is they wasted a lot of great characters. Like, you have Deathstroke in it.
For 2 minutes.
And it's all part of a tank. Why the fuck would they care about tanks in a Batman game? And Yahtzee put it correctly, and I was thinking this too. Why were they unmanned tanks? You just strap on a civilian to one of the tanks, and Batman is not going to attack it and not going to blow it up.
Hmm.
Also, the other thing about Batman Arkham Knight is that it's incredibly misogynistic. I mean, the women in that game get put through shit, and it's gratuitous shit.
That's a shame.
Yeah. And the ending, the true ending, is stupid. When you complete 100%, it gives you a special ending. and it's really stupid. You can just look it up at YouTube. It's supposed to be badass, but you know what? No, that's not the way to end the game. And here's the thing. The game starts off saying, this is the night Batman died, so it's, you know, it's not a secret that he dies in it. But the way they have the ending is that this ghost-like Batman flies at the camera. We don't know who it is. No, fuck that. You don't want to end it on a mystery. No, you know what I would have loved? If you had all the Batman supporting characters taking over Gotham, you know, taking control of his job. You have Huntress, you have Robin, you have, you know, all fanning out and, you know, becoming the new Batman Corps or something like that. You know, like, it's in good hands now. But Rocksteady decided to be cool and mysterious, and it just came off as stupid. Like I said, the way the Joker's handled is still brilliant. He's a figment of Batman's imagination. And the way Batman gets rid of him is basically just by admitting, you know what, Joker? You mean nothing. You're nothing to me. You're a memory, and I don't want even to have you as a memory anymore. And that was the Joker's biggest fear, was being forgotten. And he's forgotten. The only weird thing I wish is that when Batman is fully taken over by the Joker, have one or two scenes in which Batman is the Joker. And have him play as the Joker. Because that would have been a cool scene with the distorted, you know, interface and all that stuff. You know, because one of the best parts of Batman Arkham Asylum was that fantasy. Remember the fantasy? You know, push the middle stick to avoid getting shot. Remember that scene in the first Batman?
Yes.
They should have had something more akin to that, but they just had to get... I don't know. It was both rushed and slow-paced at the same time with this plot. Anyways. But yeah, I didn't play Doom Eternal long enough to get an achievement. It's just not what I wanted from a Doom game. Snapping back to my initial rant about games that disappointed me. So, DJ, what have you been playing?
Yeah, you know what? Like, this podcast probably won't be out before Friday, right?
Yeah. No. But fuck it. Just say it, and I'll make sure that it is.
So, I've been playing Desperados 3.
Oh, great. So, yeah. I've been seeing a lot of ads for that, and it's starting to get my juices up. And I think I'm going to get a press copy, too.
It is straight up like...
XCOM with cowboys, yeah.
Nah, Western Commandos.
Oh, okay.
Old West Commandos. And, like, I mean exactly as hard and and exactly as, like, high stakes.
The screenshot. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. Like, a lot of it is very bird's eye view, and they only occasionally get close up to the character models, in which you can see that they're...
the Fallout 2 camera.
Yeah, they very rarely get close up to the characters, and you can see that they don't move their lips, and their hands are like, they're basically like Ken dolls. But thankfully, most of the game is spent a good ways away from them, so like you don't have to worry about that too much. And like the levels are vast, the levels are huge, and like the shortest level. Like, real level, because there are some that are, like, sort of tutorials. The shortest level, like, took me about 35 minutes to beat, and some of the longer ones have taken me, like, over an hour and a half to complete.
The only complaint I really, really have is that a lot of it looks really washed out, which is a deliberate, you know, stylistic choice. But, you know, like, Gears Tactics, I don't like that choice.
So... I can attest that that is, like, you do move on to areas that are just very vibrant and beautiful.
Okay, because everything I see is just brown. Because
you start out in Colorado, and it's like dusty, mountainous Colorado, which is, yeah, it's very washed out.
The towns look like one brown building next to the next brown building, all different shades of brown.
Yeah, but you eventually make your way to, like, a mountainside mansion.
Okay.
And then there's also... And then you make your way to New Orleans, where you end up, like...
A mountainside mansion. It's not the Overlook Hotel, is it?
Nope. But you do end up in you do make your way over to New Orleans, and so you sort of work your way through like backwoods mud towns and like bayous that are just full of plant life.
So describe the combat, since you know, there's not, you don't really have to say any spoilers, because just what's the combat like?
The combat is real-time strategy, and for those who don't know, when I say commandos, you have named characters that are – you don't have – you don't get to, like, spawn units and have, like, multiple – like, just endless amounts of units.
No, they're all hero characters.
You have up to five hero characters that are – that have very specific abilities, and if one of them dies, you lose. So,
your tactics.
save early and often.
Yeah, and I gotta say, that save early and often thing is like, they built the perfect system for this type of game.
Let me ask you a question. With a system like that, I'm guessing there's an element of puzzle to it.
There is, because you have to watch, like, it's more stealth than it is like straight up combat. So like a lot of times it's choosing how to get your characters around the, just like, there's a massive amount of guards and enemies in every area. So the best, so sometimes the best way to go about it is to not even fight them. But other times you have to like choose the exact correct moment in which a guard will be just far enough away from the other ones that you can use your abilities to take him out and move him somewhere where they won't find him. And like, you have a lot of options to do that. Like, the main character, John Cooper, he has a throwing knife that if he throw that he can stab enemies to death with it at close range, but he can also throw it at range. But if he throws that knife, you don't have access to it until you go collect it from the body.
That's like Shadow Tactics, mm-hmm. where you have a Shuriken and you can throw it, but you don't get it back until you go and pick it up.
Do you know why that is? Because this is the same developer that made Shadow Tactics.
Yeah. Ah, there you go. That makes sense now.
They just splattered a thing. So, Scott.
Yes.
What have you been playing?
I've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles on the Switch. And it's an RPG game that has a battle combat like the new Final Fantasy VII remake, where you, it's kind of action, but you, each character has like, I guess, a cooldown, so it's kind of semi-turn-based, semi-action, and you have different abilities. Each character has different abilities that you can execute, and the story seems to be based around this these two giant statues. I mean, like, huge, ginormous statues that were, I guess, alive at one point and fought each other and struck each other and turned, just, they killed each other, but they were able to then, life was able to grow on these statues, and so I guess the world takes place on these statues.
So, and I think you should really mention that it's a remaster of a 2010 game.
Yes, it's a remaster. So I don't know what it looked like.
It was
between,
for the,
but
now here's,
yeah,
the thing. This is an article that we might have discussed. So the definitive edition gave the developers,
yeah,
a chance to fix what they didn't like, and one of the things they really didn't like were the menus and the navigation system, and updated the, you know, and reworked the character models. So what you're seeing on the Switch is not exactly a remaster, but more of the game being fixed.
That does seem pretty good. Yeah, you get to, it's open world where you get to wander around and explore it. You get your own pace. It does have a breadcrumb trail mechanic where it's telling you where the next objective is, if you want to just, you know, so you know what the next step in the story is, if you want to avoid it for the time being and just go fight monsters or whatever. And it has, like, I guess, items that are just like little dots of light they can pick up, and it has a nice landscape where you can go up a giant cliff and drop down into water for a nice, you know, just jump if you want to do that. And, you know, it's a it's interesting so far. It has some nice mechanics, and you know, you get to do these story points when you've, I guess, worked on your relationship with your various party members that you have in your party, and they have like a heart-to-heart about something. And I haven't gotten too far into this game, so it's like, but it seems like one of those very long RPG games, basically.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a code for the Dark Eye Book of Heroes, which is based on the Dark Eye tabletop RPG, and it's inspired by Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights. So I'm gonna see if I can't get you a code to see what you think of that.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I saw that. It looks good.
Yep. Anyways, we're gonna move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ.
Resident Evil 3 will not receive any DLCs or significant updates in the future. The producer for Resident Evil 3 Remake has confirmed that the game will not receive any DLC expansions in the future. In an interview with Silicon Era, Resident Evil 3 producer Peter Fabiano spoke about the game's success and how the remake was developed. When asked if Resident Evil 3 would receive any further tweaks or updates, Fabiano replied, "Resident Evil 3 is a finished product, meaning there won't be any sort of expansion or significant updates to the game. Resident Evil 3 includes the multiplayer game Resident Evil Resistance, which will likely see continuous updates and fresh content to keep the player base engaged. The Resident Evil 2 remake did a couple of title updates that added some new achievements as well as various cosmetic DLCs."
I don't think anybody's shedding a tear over this, are they?
I mean, like, they just announced... Or actually, they didn't announce, but like, it's pretty much out there at this point that Resident Evil 8 is definitely happening soonish. Mm-hmm. So I don't, and there's been like the rumors in the past that they're already beginning work on Resident Evil 4 remake. So nobody is concerned that there's not going to be more Resident Evil content. I think the only people that would be really upset about this is the folks that really wanted there to be a Mercenaries mode in Resident Evil 3.
Does that include you?
No. I really have fun with Resident Evil Resistance, and I don't mind that they kind of swapped Mercenaries mode for that. You're about to say something, Scott?
Yes, what is a Mercenaries mode?
Mercenaries mode in Resident Evil games is where, after you complete the game, it unlocks this extra mode in which you play a scenario, like a run-through scenario of the game, with a certain character with a certain loadout of weapons and items. For instance, like in Resident Evil 3, you might play the game as Nikolai, who has just a pistol, a knife, an herb, and a grenade. Whereas if you played it with with Jill, you might have the – or no, if you played it as Carlos, you might have the M16, a red herb, a blue herb, and some ammo clips. So the goal of it is to make it through the scenario in the smallest amount of time possible, and that was kind of like a speedrun thing for a lot of people.
Okay. It does seem interesting to have challenge modes like that, but it's also nice, I think, to have completed games where they're not adding stuff over time. So it seems like they're more concerned with...
That's the problem with Resident Evil 3. A lot of people said it's incomplete anyway.
It's not. It's mostly just short, and people didn't like that. The only thing that was really cut from it was... there was, like, one boss battle and some narrative choices that were cut from it, which was, like... And when I say narrative choices, there would be like snapshot moments where you could choose to like a choose your own story like choice in it.
The thing is that they just decided, you know what, we'll just let you do both.
Yeah, because ultimately those choices didn't really make any difference except for one at the very end of the game.
Yeah, like it was, do you want to go in first or would you rather shoot the zombies? And they said, now it's like, okay, you can shoot the zombies and go in.
Yeah, and the one that I'm talking about at the end of the original game is kill the monster now or leave the city and let it explode. And that's like the only one that like truly has any impact, because it's the difference between letting a nuke kill a nemesis and you like killing him yourself. But Yeah, so I don't think there's really that much. I don't think it's that big of a deal that they're not going to add like DLC content onto Resident Evil 3, the base game. I hope that they continue to update Resident Evil Resistance because it really is kind of like a Dead by Daylight fun mode.
Anyways, moving on to the next item. Elite Dangerous Odyssey will let players walk around. This comes to us from Polygon. Last week, the team at Frontier Developments let slip a brand new trailer for Elite Dangerous's second paid expansion, titled Elite Dangerous Odyssey. It'll add the first-person shooting mechanics and social hubs to the game for the first time. The trailer also appears to introduce the ability to land on atmospheric planets, potentially opening up billions of new worlds for exploration. Frontier also said that the expansion will feature combined arms combat, bringing together surface vehicles and starships with the players on the ground. This could potentially bring Elite in line with a vision for Star Citizen's project multi... The Star Citizen... Fuck it, I don't know why they wrote it like this. This could potentially bring Elite in line with Star Citizen's multiplayer game, which recently detailed a 40-player combat mode called Theaters of War. Players in Elite have always been able to create a representation of themselves inside the game, but the avatars have always been strapped down into a chair to pilot their vehicles. Odyssey will allow players to walk around for the first time. The trailer also shows a jetpack and various weapons. But, unlike previous editions of the game, Odyssey initially won't be compatible with virtual reality, for the main reason that you're going to be in third person, so why would you have that in virtual reality? There's also no information on how the expansion will roll out across all systems. All the games available platforms, Elite Dangerous is available on the PS4, PC, and Xbox One. Odyssey is only currently available to be added to wishlists on Steam. And one of the interesting things is that you can get Elite Dangerous, everything, on sale right now on the Xbox One for $18. But, you know what? After looking at stuff for Elite Dangerous, I think I'm starting to lean towards Star Citizen. Because the difference between Elite Dangerous and Star Citizen is that Star Citizen is more a live your life, second life sort of thing, while Elite Dangerous is more of like a freelancer thing. Mm-hmm. And EVE Online is just basically a bunch of spreadsheets.
Yeah. But, I don't know. Like, it's interesting. The amount that they've put into Elite Dangerous... Like, Star Citizen is clearly probably the more fleshed out thing. Or
well,
at least
Elite
more...
Dangerous, for those who don't know, it is a one-to-one of our galaxy. Meaning, there's 400 billion stars, all corresponding to real stars, and players have mapped out 0.00034% of the map.
Yeah, that would be huge if they're doing one-to-one.
And they have aliens. You just can't really do anything with them. Or you can fight them, and that's it.
Mm.
I mean, there's... That's the thing, is that I want to see what Star Citizen is like when dealing with its universe. Because, see, for me, Elite Dangerous starts rolling into the No Man's Sky problem of having billions and billions of stuff, but not really all that interesting stuff. Mm. I mean, the planet-side stuff that I've seen for Star Citizen, and also debarking your ship, getting into a satellite station, having a gunfight with people who are trying to rob it, then leaving and hopping on your ship and escaping. You know, that's the sort of shit that you want in a space life sim, you know? So we'll see. I mean, the problem here is that Star Citizen, you can start playing now, the alpha, which is in 3.9, but it'll cost you $45.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to spend money to play an alpha. You did that with Fortnite, and a fat lot good it did you, by the way, since the Fortnite that was released has nothing to do with the Fortnite that you were playing.
I mean, Fortnite Save the World exists as pretty much a representation of what I played when I played Fortnite. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's. I mean, the moment that they pivoted to Battle Royale, it kind of changed everything about what they were doing with that game.
Yeah.
And now Fortnite is essentially Second Life because they host concerts in the game.
Yeah, that stupid marshmallow thing.
No, I'm talking about even as recent as Travis Scott's astronomical show. That was like maybe a month ago now.
I'd rather play Town of Salem. But anyways, like I said, I don't know. Elite Dangerous doesn't seem to have what I want. And I did play the original Elite back in 85, by the way, when it was just a lot of line figures on the screen. And it was... That game, the original Elite, just plopped you in there and said, here's the manual, fuck you, we're not going to tell you anything else. You want to learn how to play, read the fucking manual. And your manual was thick and obtuse. And learning how to take off and dock was the biggest chores for me to learn. So forget being an interstellar merchant. I just want to be able to get out of the space station.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, like I said, I'm keeping an eye on Star Citizen. It may be what I want, but God knows when that'll ever come out.
Yeah, that's been the biggest problem.
I mean, it is out. I mean, it's in early access. They're in their alpha, sort of like when Minecraft was in their alpha. But like I said, you know, you could spend $20 to play Minecraft in beta or whatever, or $10 when it was in alpha, I think it was. But I'm not going to spend $45 to play Star Citizen in alpha. Had I been a backer, then sure, why not? Because I already spent my money, and I'm already in. They had that free week, and I completely forgot about it. Oh, well.
Yeah. This will be... I mean, we're not even going to... This game, this expansion, isn't coming until, I think they said, early 2021. So it's going to be quite some time before we see this one. And yeah. I think that by the time that we're actually ready to start thinking about Elite Dangerous Odyssey being launched, they will have probably talked about plans to put it on PS5 and Xbox Series X by then.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of a foregone conclusion.
Anyways, we're going to move on to next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. The Rock of Ages 3 open beta starts on June 9th.
This
is
happens to be when we're recording this podcast.
Yeah. This is from PC Gamer. Rock of Ages is getting a new sequel soon, and it also going to have an open beta. It will start on June 9th, and players can sign up for it at a publisher Modius Games website. Rock of Ages first came out in 2011 and was followed by the sequel Rock of Ages 2, Bigger and Bolder, in 2017.
Come on, you gotta admit, that's a great subtitle.
Yeah, Bigger and Bolder, Rock of Ages. Rock of Ages is a competitive tower defense meets arcade action game with Monty Python-esque sense of humor. It was quite well received back in 2011, then again in 2017, so the third edition is expected to live up to expectations. The biggest new feature will be a system to make new maps and share them with others online.
I think when they say it's Monty Python-esque, it's more like it's Terry Gilliam's animation come to life.
Hmm.
And you take a look at this really quick.
Because the boulder is just a smiling face on it.
That
I gotta look at the logo and right away.
You know what it is. Yeah. So yeah, you know, here's the thing: if they're not gonna have any Katamari Damacy or you know, any of those kind of games, at least this is coming out. I mean, I really liked Wreck-A-Tier, which is basically Kinect's version of a 3D Angry Birds.
Uh-huh.
So this is a game in which you're a boulder and you're just wrecking shit, and that's it.
That's
all physics function. Just to blow stuff up.
That sounds cathartic in a certain way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So yeah, if you go to modusgames.com, you can just download the open beta and try it out. And, you know, it's not the deepest game, but it's just... I don't know. It's you have to watch it in action to really get a sense of what it's really like.
Yeah, you're just a big giant boulder that looks like you're rolling around hitting stuff, like you said.
You're hitting Monty Python characters, and
yeah.
You have this serene look on your face, like the boulder was doing drugs just beforehand, and is just like in a haze going down the thing. So, here's the thing: when you want to access the beta, you can choose Steam, PS4, or Xbox One. And it's worth checking out. And, you know, Like I said, it's one of the more goofy games, and if we're not going to get another, Katamari Damacy, this is a good thing to as a good replacement. No, not a good replacement, because who doesn't want Katamari Damacy?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's also a game I've always wanted to play. I've seen the trailers for it all the time, and it's like, I'd like to try that out sometime. And this is a good chance to try it out.
Man, it does look fun.
Yep. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Persona 4 Golden reportedly heading to PC this week. Persona 4 Golden, the expanded edition of Atlus's beloved PlayStation 2 role-playing game, will be launching on Steam this weekend, according to an increasing number of reports. Persona 4, originally released in 2008, refining the series' dual-focused formula, one part JRPG dungeon crawler, one part school life sim. Wow. I'm going to try that again. Persona 4, originally released in 2008, refining the series' dual-focused formula, one part dungeon crawler and one part school life sim. There was plenty of enjoyment to be had in Persona 4's randomly generated dungeons, as players eventually found themselves on the other side of a mysterious TV screen. But it was the sim-like daily activities, classes, clubs, and part-time jobs that really made the game shine. Their low-key daylight thrills, grounding the more fanciful nighttime endeavors and helping players form a real emotional bond with the engaging cast of characters. Persona 4 received a much expanded content release, or much expanded release on PlayStation Vita in 2012, introducing new story content, a new dungeon, plus numerous other additions and enhancements. And it's this version, known as Persona 4 Golden, that is now reportedly heading to PC this weekend. A sudden flurry of activity relating to a PC release began earlier with the discovery. Yeah, with the discovery of a SteamDB listing for Persona 4 Golden, complete with accompanying imagery. Well-connected industry analyst Daniel Ahmad stepped in to claim the game would be announced and released at the same time, while the reliable Wario64 wrote, "It's real," citing multiple confirms. Then came the discovery of a Denuvo support page for Persona 4 Golden.
You don't know why I'm groaning. Denuvo is a form of DRM.
Mm-hmm. And a Gamatsu report suggesting the title will launch on Saturday, June 13th, with its sources saying an announcement is due on the PC gaming show following an immediate release.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's real, because what they're going to do is they're going to show the trailer PC gaming show, and they're going to say, "You can play it right now!" Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to the PC gaming show, because there's probably going to be a lot of this going on, in which they're going to announce games and say, "Oh, by the way, you can play it now."
Yeah, I can see that.
The only problem I have with Persona 4 and 5 is that they're kind of homophobic and transphobic, and I remember Persona 5 had to have two scenes removed because they were that bad. So, I mean, Persona 4 has this character who's... other alter ego is gay, and all his friends start talking about how effeminate he is and how much you know, and how much he likes art and flowers and stuff like that, and that proves how gay he is, but he'll never come out of the closet, making it a very uncomfortable character. But other than that, it's fine. I mean, a lot of people I know love Persona. And Persona 4 and 5... you know, it's not a visual novel, but it has that feel, you know, whenever you do the classes and clubs and stuff like that. You know, it's sort of like you're building a character through their activities. So, you've played...
Yeah.
Well, you've probably played the Persona 5 fighting game, didn't you?
I've played Persona 5, and I've played Persona 4, and I've played Persona 4 Arena, which is the fighting game.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. They're pretty good at doing most of their stories, except for when they like try to engage with this sort of thing, and then they have a...
Kanji
Tatsumi, and his deal is that he loves a lot of things like sewing and basically fashion, and like basically the point of Persona 4
is that each character's shadow is a manifestation of their insecurities, and his is that he's insecure with having feminine interests while he proclaims to be a school bully and also super masculine. So it comes off in a way that's like, I don't know. His isn't even like the most problematic. There's one character that is the child of she's the child of a famous cop and wants to be a detective herself, but in the game, well, I don't even know if this is true in real life or if it's just in the game, but like Japan police are entirely misogynistic in the game, and so she basically dresses up like a boy because she wants to be a famous detective. Mm-hmm. And so her insecure part is coming face to face with her femininity. But by the time they finish that, and she's like, I accept myself for my desire to be a male, they're just like, okay, you're still a girl. And they just sort of like trail off on that. And it's like nothing was accomplished.
Yeah. Have you ever watched the Japanese language version of the Pokemon series?
Yes.
Okay, then you know that James, in the American voice, he's very, you know, he has a very high voice and all that, but in the Japanese version, he's like gruff and all, but he's still very effeminate. So they have that thing going on.
Yeah.
And I would then you say have that... the episode in which he grows boobs and fake boobs.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I don't know why. But just to embarrass Misty and say, look how big my boobs are, little boob. Sorry, it's a banned episode and it's the weirdest friggin' thing.
It's definitely a social disconnect on a certain level because of the way that Japan is, because Japan is very misogynistic in a lot of ways.
Well, here's the thing about, from what I understand about Japan and homosexuality, is that homosexuality is something else. It's not a part of who you are. It's just something you do.
Yeah. And, like, so you've got when it comes to Atlus and the way they approach these things in games like Persona 4, 5, and Catherine.
Oh, please. Catherine just makes me want to slap the main character in the face.
They try to go for these, like, poignant, uncomfortable points, and they set them up, but then they just fucking whiff. Like, they're real good at setting up those poignant moments and making the looking like they're going to make the attempt at validity, and then they just, like, I don't know.
Why can't Vincent just tell Catherine that he has a girlfriend?
If only that was the only problem.
What, you're talking about a monster, a female butt that wants to eat you, and all the men are dressed as sheep? That's not...
There's also a trans character in Catherine, and really?
What is it, Catherine with a Q?
No, it's a female to male trans character that is affected by the nightmares, and ultimately, like, I don't know.
They did add Catherine with a Q in that game.
Yes.
So you have Catherine with a C, Catherine with a K, and now Catherine with a Q.
I'll just leave it at the fact that they try to set it up as a legitimate character with legitimate concerns and explore trans identity, and then they ultimately fall into the folly of basically going for a gay panic joke with her.
Here's a little hint to Atlus. Get someone who is actually trans to do the writing, or at least advise you.
Yeah.
They do exist.
Right? Yeah. Don't make your characters gay panic characters.
Yeah. Or at least if they're gay panic, just have them decide one or the other if they really are gay. You know, at least... I don't know. It's... Getting back to Persona, though, it's coming to PC, and a lot of people who never played it because it's always been on console are going to get a chance to be exposed to it. It'll be interesting to see how they deal with the story. Probably not at all, but you never know. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm curious. I mean, here's, you know, it's a unique combination, you know, You fight demons. Oh, and do we talk about... Is it only in 5 in which you can enslave monsters that you kill to work for you?
No, straight up Persona is like demon Pokemon.
Yeah. And you can also combine them too, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. To make bigger, stronger demons. Up to and including Satan himself.
Wow. That's ambitious.
Like I said, I'm willing to give Persona a try. I never got to actually play it. I just know it through popular pop culture osmosis. And everybody I talk to just loves the game. They may not love the writing on occasion, like we just pointed out, but they love the game, you know? I mean, and until there's a Bully 2, this is all we're going to get. And yeah. I know that Paul desperately wants Bully 2 to come out someday. And they keep on teasing Bully 2, and it never comes out. It's always, oh, we're just going to do Bully for the next... We're going to do a remaster for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you play Bully?
Yes, of course.
Scott, did you?
No, I have not played that.
Okay. Just remember, there's an achievement for kissing all the boys in each clique. And they call it, what is it, going for the rainbow, reaching for the rainbow achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is if the the butchest guy is always coy about kissing with you, you know, from the greasers, I think, or the jocks? No, it's the jocks. And he's always coy about it, but of all the characters you kiss, he's the one who wants to do it the most. But he's always coy about it because he's a big old jock. I'm sorry, we're talking about Bully now. So, you never played any of the Persona games, Scott?
I have not, no. They just didn't seem that interesting to me, but this looks like it's kind of reminding me of its issues, like,
cost, but here's the thing, is that you know that there's going to be Steam sales, and my advice would be just wait for a Steam sale, and then you can check it out, like, for $15 or something.
Yeah. I know, I have a pretty big backlog of games to play, so I don't know if I'll have time.
One of my friends recently told me that Trails in the Sky 3 is a perfect 10. And I need to maybe look into that, because I have been looking for a good JRPG to play.
Yeah, but it does that Ator, the Fighting Eagle thing, of getting around incest by saying, she's adopted, but you grew up with her.
I don't know.
She's not adopted, he's adopted. He's not really technically adopted.
It's just they have that adoption in there to say, well, it's not real incest, even though they grew up together and treated each other as siblings, but it's okay.
It's one of those weird... I guess I've noticed a thing now that, I mean, I guess it's a thing, I don't know what else to call it, but where two people who are not blood related grow up like siblings and then get together later because that's a thing, apparently.
That never happens.
That never happens.
When you live with someone that long as a sibling, they're a sibling.
Yeah.
And all biological urges vanish.
That's not the biggest part of the story, though. That's
I know, just... I'm just saying, it's... At least, you know what? There was one game, I forgot which one it was, in which they admitted that the character was 13 years old, because you know how they do in Japanese games, they're 13 in Japan, but they age them up. So it isn't as creepy to have them wearing bikinis in the American version.
Yeah, that was awkward when I was playing Dark Cloud 2, and then I found out the... main girl could wear a bikini, and I'm like, no. She's like 16 or something. I think not. I'm not even sure she is 16.
No, she's 16 in the American version, but 13 in the Japanese version.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
Probably.
It happens all the time.
Calm down, Japan. Yeah.
It's a cultural thing, just an icky cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when they were doing the advertisement for the PS3 release of Ninja Gaiden 2, and it had a long... You know what they do with the remasters. They have the... Like they do with Street Fighter, you know, they do Street Fighter, X Turbo, XD, Windows, whatever, you know. And what they did was they put a pair of boobs on a wall, and they had a hidden camera. and they filmed all these Japanese guys going up to the wall and grabbing these fake tits on the wall. You have to see the YouTube commercial. It is hilarious in a, oh, God, this is a cringe sort of way. And here's the thing is that a lot of times their girlfriends with them, and the girlfriends urged them to do it.
And anyways, TJ, if you play the game, you should play the first one first, because it's a very large story.
Yeah, and it carries its save, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can import your save, so that's nice, too. It's a nice incentive.
Okay.
I mean, here's the thing. Dolls Get Udonis, that there will be some deal on Steam to get all three for $20 or something like that.
Oh, yeah. There'll probably be a summer sale, if it hasn't already started.
Yeah, I mean, oh, there's, let's see, Xbox is doing their sale. They also have a special, I don't know, is it Steam? One of them is having a gay pride sale. I think it's Steam that is having it, in which games with LGBT themes are heavily off. I know there's a sale for both combining all three Spyro games and all three Crash Bandicoot games on one six-game pack for, like, $40. It's on Xbox One. I think it's also on PS as well.
Yeah, I've actually been looking forward to someone else playing this game with me because I've been wanting to talk about various characters, and I want to see what your take.
Trails in the Sky?
Hmm?
Okay. Well, then there you go. As a matter of fact, you know, we can do a special edition of this podcast like we used to have Jordan, Paul, and Jordan's wife, Jennifer, would all talk about Doctor Who.
As a special podcast, I remember that.
Doctor Who. So maybe you guys can do a Nothing But Trails in the Sky episode.
Yep, I still got to get through this week, though. But it's something that I'm very seriously considering, just because I know it's all on PS4. I know it's got a decent story from what people tell me. Yeah. I do kind of want to check something out that's just kind of an old-school JRPG. Plus, it looks like it has an interesting combat system.
It does. It's a strategy turn-based, and I guess you could say squad-based because you get four characters in a battle.
Oh, you just said squad-based. That interested TJ right there.
I'm into it.
Next week we're going to have a lot to talk about because TJ will probably have more to say about Desperados 3, and we'll also have to talk about the PlayStation 5 conference.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
And
one thing before
the
we get
Gaming
out of
Show
here.
Thing too.
Yeah, for sure. That'll be interesting to watch. One thing before we get out of here. There was one other thing I just remembered I've been playing because I saw an ad for it. So Nintendo just out of nowhere released this thing recently on the Switch. It was a 51 Clubhouse Games.
Yeah.
Oh, and yes.
I've been kind of looking for a way to just play more board games since we're both stuck inside.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty dope.
I had the DS version.
It's got like, I mean, like it's got everything that you might expect, like straight up like chess, checkers, shogi, things like that. But it also straight up has like Yahtzee, yeah. Connect Four.
It has Chinese checkers. It has Old Maid. It has Sevens. It has Blackjack, Red Hearts, Rummy.
Yeah, games
Texas
you may
Hold'em.
Never have seen before. It's really cool.
There's an entire section in the game dedicated to like basically
variety games.
Collectible games that Nintendo used to sell before they were a video game company, yeah. Which is kind of just a cool fact, like. They have Hanafuda, like not Sudoku. What's the one where it's the pile of tiles on top of each other?
By the way, for those of you who don't know, this is originally a Mahjong. DS game that came out like 15 years ago.
Was it on DS 15 years ago?
Yeah. Now the Switch version has a little bit different because the Switch version has tennis, soccer, curling, boxing, baseball, air hockey. It has fishing.
It also has online
gallery.
Play. It also has online play and touch play on the in undocked mode.
Even comes with a piano. if you want to play some piano on it, you can do that.
That's sweet.
You know what the Switch looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you lay it down flat with the Joy-Cons in, and it is basically like a little table that you play on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole thing is very, very fun. I really have enjoyed my time with it. We've been playing around with it. And the coolest part about it is, like, if you don't know the games, it will go to great lengths to teach you how to play them. Like, I've always wanted to learn shogi, so, like, you can sit down and straight up learn shogi from this.
It's too bad they don't have Go on it. But then again, Go would require a lot of memory, because Go isn't is like Othello in that it's not exactly taxing to do the graphics and all that, but the AI has to be. They still haven't created an AI like they have an AI for chess, because there's so much Go is so much more involved. Have you tried any of the sports on it, like toy baseball?
I have played a little bit of the air hockey, and it's quite fun.
Bowling in it.
One of my coworkers was saying that the tennis one is pretty fun too. I want to play the race. There's a race cars one in it that reminds me of like Sega Dirt Rally or like the very very old Dirt Rally games.
Yep. They also have
It's really funny, like the names that they come up with for some of the games to avoid like
they can't say
licensing
Othello,
infringement.
Because Othello is trademarked, so they call it Renegade.
They call Yahtzee Yacht Dice.
No, actually, here's the thing. Yacht is actually the real name of the game. Yahtzee is a trademarked name, but the actual game name that you're playing is Yacht.
There's an Uno game in there, and it's just called Last Card.
Yeah.
That's a nice, simple name.
Now here's a question. In that, do you have to actually type out or press Yacht Last Card before you play it?
I don't know.
Because that's the thing about Uno that they never really capture is the fact that if you don't say Uno, or in Crazy 8's last card, you don't win, and you're forced to draw cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, they can't call Connect. They can't call it Connect 4. They call it 4 in a row. And
So definitely, like, it's definitely
it's
worth it.
51 freaking games. Just get it. Or 52 games, because Piano. Piano is technically not a game.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely worth the price. It's not too much. It's not much of a. I think it's like only like $30.
Yeah, and if you divide that by 50, that would be 60 cents for each game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's the thing: the Switch is perfect for it because you just pick it up, take it with you. Plop it down in front of another person and say, "Okay, let's play some Yahtzee."
Yeah, for sure. Or chess, or checkers, or 4 in a row.
Or baseball, or air hockey, or billiards.
I got to try the toy baseball. That might be fun.
Yeah. Actually, Pigtail is a uniquely Japanese game, so you should try that.
Sure, I'll have a look at it.
It's actually a party game. So here's the thing. It's part rock, scissors, paper, part card game. It's sort of like mixing rock, paper, scissors with Magic the Gathering, although not as involved as Magic the Gathering. You just get cards that you attack people with.
Huh.
Or playing cards that you attack people with. Let me put it that way. So yeah, I mean... It's interesting. I played it a long time ago. And it's kind of weird, but fun.
It does look fun.
Yeah. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week, and we're going to be talking PS5, we're going to be talking about PC, we're going to be talking about Desperados. So there's going to be a lot of show next week.
For sure.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.